Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Welcome back to another episode of Money Honeys, where we,
Freddie,
Chantel,
and Devin
are striving to break the taboo of money discussion
while also learning the economics and taboos of different industries.
Which is why today we have sex worker activist extraordinaire, Selena the Stripper.
Woo! I am so excited.
Oh, yeah.
You knew I would be, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Selena literally told me on the phone just to worry about like the resume bullet points. But honestly, it's just so impressive that I was like, I'm just going to gush for a minute.
We got it.
Okay. Selena, who uses Fayfair pronouns, is a sex worker, writer, podcaster, and community organizer. After graduating from Maryland Institute College of Art in 2015, Faye realized Faye didn't want to join the elitist world of institutional art and instead began stripping and finding financial stability within a community of incredibly strong, radically free thinking artists. Selena is published many times over, is the president of Strippers United, hosts a podcast called Ho in the Know, shares writing and photography on Fair Instagram at Pretty Boy Girl, and posts weekly exclusive content on Fair Patreon at The Real Pretty Boy Girl.
Yo, talk about
wow.
This is why resume. I was like, I'm not just going to bullet point it.
Faye is booked and busy.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Selena is here to tell us all about the economics of sex work as well as strip club etiquette.
You got to follow strip club etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be that person.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. don't. I haven't really been to strip clubs that much in my life. So my knowledge about strip clubs and the stripper space does not run super deep. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to talk to Selena and hear what Faye has to say.
Which brings me to like my question. So where do y'all stand when it comes to your knowledge about the economics of sex work and stripping?
My knowledge in this space is like quite minimal. But I firmly believe it's like sex work is work. It should be treated as such. But I do need to educate myself more. There is a lot more that I need to know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's, you know, in my head, I feel like it's generally just like stage dancing and like maybe a private dance here or there. But I think there's like a lot more that goes into it, especially on the financial side that I really have no idea about. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear like all of the ins and outs for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. I used to have privates with a couple of dancers when I worked at S Factor, my pole dancing studio. And it was interesting because, you know, my pole dancing knowledge and how I taught is like very intimate and like kind of like a psychonaut experience. Like you go into yourself, it's meditative. Mm. But when I would give privates to actual strippers, you know, their whole business model is predicated on how they can make you feel. And so a lot of like it's a really interesting combination because it's like, yes, it's performative, but it's also completely intimate. Mm-hmm. Like eye contact means a lot. Mm. Touch does a lot of heavy lifting and it's like, I don't know. Remember when we went to the Magic Mike in Vegas when we shot that BuzzFeed video?
Yeah.
Remember how deeply those guys would look into our eyes? It was like unnerving.
True.
Right. And but you felt connected as hell.
Yeah. Like there was no escaping that.
Yeah.
And so it's like an exercise on being a performer, but also being like right there with you, which I think is something that we don't think about as labor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's both. It's how to express yourself while having that other person feel close.
Yeah, it's therapy plus entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, y'all. Well, I am ready to dive right in. So let's welcome Selena to the pod
after the break.
You're going to have to wait.
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
What's good, y'all? It's Aaliyah from The Young and Dumb Show. I have something for you. If you're young and interested in learning more about different careers, becoming an entrepreneur, and really get into the bag, then be sure to check out and subscribe to The Young and Dumb Show. On this show, we sit down with the biggest, and I'm talking the biggest, career professionals, entrepreneurs, influencers, and entertainers to break down how to be successful in different industries. It's brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip hop, powered by creators. Let's get it, y'all.
We are back. We have our guest Selena calling in. Welcome, Selena.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. We're so excited.
Yeah, and you're such a cutie too.
I know.
You are very attractive.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, take that.
So Selena, you spend a lot of energy on your social platforms educating folks on this subject. And before we start, we just want to take a moment to say thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
For the education and all that you do, because I firmly believe if you want to control people, you have to control the way they think and have sex. So you're doing a very brave thing. And two, you are willing to come on our podcast to talk to us about this stuff. So thanks again. Thank you times two.
Oh, well, thanks. I love the double thanks.
So to start, can you tell our listeners how sex work is defined and what professions might be a part or underneath that umbrella, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I like that you call it an umbrella term because that's what it is. It's something that holds a lot of different classifications. So I kind of define it as people engaging in intimate labor. And so there's a variety of people who fall into that category. And whenever I say intimate, I also mean like sexual, because I think that that's also important. It is sex work. It's not just the intimacy, but intimacy is a really important part. So there's cammers, there's strippers, porn stars, escorts, people who do street-based sex work, there's phone sex operators, there's people doing like the variety of online sex work. That whole thing has expanded so much. So I mean, OnlyFans has really made things different, but there's also people who sell clips, there's people who just sell online chat sessions via like Zoom or via Skype or things like that. There's cuddlers are fantastic as well. I mean, there's just like a huge number of people who fit under this umbrella term, and it's really useful because it's a way of classifying labor and creating solidarity around a group of people who are otherwise excluded from a lot of discussions around labor and around protections of labor.
Totally.
I really love that term, intimate labor.
Me too. Yeah.
Because
very light bulby for me.
Yeah. Because you're right. I mean, it obviously does extend to sex work, but there's an intimacy piece that I think that, you know, people overlook a lot because they rush straight to the sex part. And a lot of like the intimacy heavy lifting comes in the pillow talk. Either afterwards, before, you know, it comes in making people feel individual and seen. And I think that's a huge part of the business.
I mean, it really seems like it's an art. It's a skill, like a true skill, being able to like get people to open up and trust you. Because I feel like the trust is a big part of it, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's so much trust that is involved. And we really have to create an environment where people are invited to be vulnerable in a very special way. And so we have to kind of create that from the start, just establishing a rapport of openness and acceptance and care for people. So yeah, there's a lot of, that is the intimate labor.
Wow. Absolutely. And that is at times very laborious, I would imagine.
Even pretty consistently laborious.
Yeah. Or I'm like trying to like connect. I mean, also, I'm more of like an introvert at heart too.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm just even to like energetically of like, how do you like create a space so that this person is very deliberately feeling these things? Like, y'all.
Yeah.
That's work.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely an introvert, and I would say that a lot of the sex worker friends that I have are very deeply introverted people. So it's really interesting that you can be very introverted, and I think in a way like introversion can lend you a sense of like sensitivity to especially people who have other who feel that like fear or feel very shy about being open, so you can be like very receptive to that shyness and kind of be able to work around it or encourage people to open up. I think it's kind of inviting to purchase sex work with an introvert, especially if you're an introvert yourself.
Yeah, like I feel like it's definitely almost an act of like meeting people where they are, and I feel like if you are an introvert, it's almost easier, or you almost have like a different sense of like, I don't know, more like empathy for where they are. So you can kind of like work with them in that way. So Selena, what are common misconceptions that you feel are important for people to realize regarding sex work?
One is the amount of labor that it takes. A lot of people think of it as an easy money occupation. And while you're able to make a lot of money faster than you would in other jobs, there's a lot that you also have to kind of wager in the balance, I guess. You have to wager your credibility. You have to wager your position in society and the way that you're regarded. You have to put on the line your ability to get jobs in the future. A lot of people face significant discrimination in housing and also in child custody cases. There's just pretty rampant stigma-based discrimination directed at sex workers. And so while you know, the money can be great. And I would also say that it's not always great. A lot of people who are in sex work are making money that is kind of at around the poverty line, up to like about middle class. There are very few, I would say maybe like top 1% of sex workers who are making, you know, six figures. But that's super rare. Most people are kind of just getting by and living paycheck to paycheck. It's also something that a lot of families do. There are some notable like sex working families who do incredible work and are very public about it, and they have that like place of like somewhat privilege, you know, to be out in the world. Or they do it out of complete bravery. I think of King Noir and Jet Set Jasmine. They're an incredible couple, and they have a very public stance about it, and they create porn together, and they're very out in the open about it. And there's a lot of, you know, great sex work couples. I mean, I think of, I think it's Joanna Angel and Little Hands, or yeah, I think it's Little Hands. Sorry if I got the names wrong. I love them. I think it's so great that they're out in the open doing this. But, you know, there's a variety of people doing it. There are a variety of ages. My grandma of sex work, Cinnamon Love, is absolutely incredible. She's a granny making porn, and she's been in the industry forever and is super iconic. Another thing is that... you know, this is somewhat related to porn. I could go on and on about like a million different things that are that people just don't know about sex work, especially porn and things like that. But a lot of the licensing issues can really screw performers over. So people may not have full, you know, rights over their content or distribution. Cinnamon found that her image was used in a couple different movies. She was not listed in those movies at all as a credited role, and she was not given any money, no money for, you know, her being featured in this. She wasn't even informed of it until somebody told her that she was featured. I think she was featured in I think it was like a poster in like Snakes on a Plane or something like that. It was a Samuel L. Jackson film, and they had photoshopped her image onto the poster with him, and she just did not know.
What?
Excuse?
That's not legal. Like big time stuff.
Yeah, that's wild. You have very little
control over your image in this. And I mean, that's just kind of a very common thing in the sex industries. I would say like in stripping, there's a lot of other things that are very, which is what I do. So I'm a stripper primarily, but I've done a variety of different sex work. I've escorted, I've been a sugar baby, I've done phone sex, I've done camming, I've done some BDSM work as well. So, but there's a lot of exploitative things that are more on the systemic level than necessarily one-to-one interaction level. I think a big misconception is that the primary people taking advantage of sex workers are customers and our clients. And I would say that it's more systemic things that are exploiting us or creating exploitative situations.
It sounds like, you know, you described hard costs of doing this job. Like a lot of times we think about like the cons of taking a position anywhere, we describe those as soft costs. Those are like leveraging your place in society, leveraging your future as to have another career. Those are really difficult things to contend with.
I mean, it's definitely very hard costs. And, you know, we think of them as, I mean, you can put a number to a lot of these costs. Unfortunately, and they're
right.
And I mean, some of them are so expensive. I mean, having custody of your child, like, can you put a price on that?
Right.
Why? Right. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Right. I know. I never even, basically, like, did my like mental math to carry like the stigmatization through to a custody battle, through to buying a home, through to getting loans or anything.
There's a lot of sex workers also have their bank accounts taken, especially escorts, especially online sex workers will just have their bank accounts closed because they're participating in erotic labor. And there are a lot of clauses that are anti-vice, I guess, in banking. And so sex trade things kind of fall under that umbrella. And so a lot of bank accounts for sex workers are seized without notice. And just, you know, a lot of sex workers are excluded from banking. They are unbanked.
Wait, you said something about a vice clause in banking, which is hilarious to me because I feel like if we're going to talk about vices, banks are like the number one contender, or like the financial industry.
Right. To call what a vice? Mm-hmm. I mean, bombing a country for oil is not a vice, apparently, but consensual sex labor, one to one between two consenting individuals, is a vice, apparently. So there are vice clauses that prevent things like sex work, but also like marijuana from participating in major banks There's also like major mm-hmm. credit processing fees that adult websites have to pay, and adult entertainment spots as well. So like strip clubs also pay like a much higher rate for credit processing than other, you know, regular businesses, I guess, non-vice businesses. Yeah, it's definitely like a kind of preemptive protective measure, I guess. But there's also a lot of conservative lobbying involved with how this comes to be. So conservative lobbyists and investors and stakeholders in banking institutions put a lot of pressure on banks to not do business with vice, quote unquote, vice businesses. You know, sex work, gambling, various drugs, things like that, but mostly like marijuana, since that's what's becoming decriminalized or legalized.
I thought it was really interesting what you're saying of like kind of the added taxes and stuff, like for places like a strip club, and like it feels important to be framing a strip club like as a workplace, where it's like when you go into anyone's workplace, there's inherent rules that you follow. There's like, you know, if I went into your job, I'm not going to be like running around however I want in there. It's like, no, I'm visiting you mm-hmm. at your place of work. Mm-hmm. I have to conduct myself in the expected manner. And I love on your Instagram too, just like the information you provide of like, when you come to a strip club, here's how you should be acting. Can you just talk about some of those rules that people need to be aware of when they enter a workplace that is a strip club?
Yeah. Well, I would say, like you just said, it is a workplace and we are all working. And something that people don't understand is that in most states, aside from the state of California, and with some exceptions because strip clubs are notorious for breaking the rules, strippers do not get paid a wage. So all of the money that we make is based on what you purchase at the club or what you hand us. And so if you think you can just come to the club and watch a stripper dance on stage for free, that means that dancer is not getting paid any money. And so you're just getting a free show. And that's just honestly super rude and just not fair at all, because we're coming in, we're putting on a show, and this show takes skill. It takes...
Absolutely.
Yeah, it takes skill. It takes time to develop, you know, your particular style. And there's a lot that goes into the presentation of being an effective dancer. There's like monetary investments in hair and makeup mm-hmm. and body and things like that. So there are a lot of costs that we assume going in. And then additionally, we have to pay things like house fees and tip outs. So most clubs...
What are those?
Most clubs make you pay to work, which is definitely a very strange situation. We pay fees to be allowed to work our shifts across the board. So whether that's like a flat house fee, and sometimes these house fees can be $100 to hundreds of dollars expectation that you have to pay coming in or that you pay whenever you leave. And then in addition, there tends to be an accepted understanding that you will also tip out the rest of the staff. And the rest of the staff is making hourly money, so they're getting an hourly wage, right. But strippers are not, and yet they're expected to tip out the bouncer and often managers, and they're paying the DJ, and they're paying whoever's like counting the dances. So they're paying all of that as well. Another thing is that a lot of clubs, well, not all, because the thing about this industry, it is very heterogeneous. So there's not very much continuity of the way that things are from place to place. So most strip clubs that I've worked at, any dance that you purchase with a stripper, the price will be split between the club and the dancer. So the dancer may receive 50% of the total dance price. If you're working at a club that penalizes you for missing a shift, you could get as little as 30% of the dance, and 70% goes to the club. So it's really important to know what the amount of money your dancer is getting so that you can tip adequately. Another thing I encourage people to do is to think about tipping like you tip at a restaurant. Like, you want to tip like 15 to 20% at least. Like, that's like the minimum. A lot of times people don't even have an idea of how to tip. I mean, I generally say like go for more because, you know, it's a high risk occupation. And so you're paying people to assume that risk and you're enjoying something that is like them assuming that risk. So you should compensate them.
Typically, I feel like with any kind of body work, massages, getting your hair cut, whatever, it should be a 25 to 30% tip.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I think across the board,
right? The problem is, like, not enough people even tip the 20%, you know?
Right.
It's definitely, like, you have to be very assertive as a stripper to make the money that you may want to make. Because people don't always have the decorum, or they'll try to kind of skate out with and feign that they don't know that they're supposed to tip. They think, oh, just the dance is enough and you've already gotten paid and you should be happy for it. Another misconception is that it's just for fun and that we're just out here, you know, being sluts having fun.
And, listen, you know, I'm all about sluts having fun.
But this is more.
This is more.
This is more than that.
This is a job. Yeah.
It's a job. Like, I can go be a slut having fun at a regular bar or whatever.
Yeah. At home. We can be a slut at home having a great time.
I'm really upset. Yeah. I'm really upset by these, because it's almost like when you have, like when you're a hairstylist working in a salon and you have a booth fee that you have to pay, which is what, you know, some of what is being charged by or being charged to the customer. But, and like, so I understand that, like, I guess you're utilizing the space, but kind of like you were saying, it's very high risk, like, to be taking, you know, I really think it should be like 30%.
Right.
To the establishment at the most. And then like 70% goes
they charge to,
to
get in for most of these places. Like, why are you taking a cut out of the dancer's money when you're already charging customers to come in a lot of these places?
And then also the tipping out of the DJ and the security guard. I'm mad about it.
I'm like, what's left?
Like, literally what's left?
You know?
I've definitely had friends who have made nothing in a night and still felt obliged to tip out people because that system is just really ingrained into dancers and you can be mistreated if you don't tip out. Bouncers may not walk you to your car. They'll just be like, oh, well, you know, let them go. Like, we're not even going to make sure that this dancer makes it to their car safely, you know? Like,
I hate that. Can you walk us through the process of, because I'm thinking about tipping and tipping out. I can't help but think about when I used to work at a restaurant. And a lot of times when I worked at a restaurant, I wouldn't report my tips, especially like cash tips. So can you walk us through the process of you just finished a dance, you're getting your money off the ground, or if you have someone who picks it up for you, like walk us through that process of how you report your tips.
Well, typically dancers don't have to report their tips to the club. It's generally kind of, so there's just a lot of shady stuff that happens. So a lot of times, unless you're in California where the rules are very strict, in other states, there's a lot of underreporting of the number of workers at clubs. There's very consistent underreporting of earnings. There's just a lot of money laundering that happens or just tax fraud, I would say, that happens with strip clubs across the board. So they're not reporting a lot of the people who they're paying out. And so there's not very much expectation for dancers to also report anything. And another, well, I guess, so there are clubs that will collect the money for you and then they will count it. But that feels very shady because a lot of times they take the money into another room and then they tell you afterwards how much you make. And then sometimes or often they will take a cut and you just don't know how much of a cut they've taken. You just have to trust them that they're honestly giving you your money back. But the issue of taxes with stripping is definitely, well, I would say with sex work across the board, is definitely a complicated one.
Would you say that generally, like, a lot of these things are kind of just like unspoken rules in the club versus like requirements, and it's almost just like gaining, you know, any type of respect or making sure that people don't bother you? You know what I mean? Like, how is it? What's the vibe?
Well, yeah, we need vibe check.
Yeah.
There's definitely a combination of the two. So I'll give a personal example. I was tipping, but apparently I wasn't tipping out enough. And one night after work, I got a call from a manager who said that there was a meeting of staff where they discussed certain dancers and not tipping enough. And apparently a group of people, unnamed to me, had complained that I was not tipping enough. And the manager said that I may not continue to have employment if I don't adjust my tipping. So it can be that direct. It can be that explicit. And that's definitely coercion. And that's definitely all kinds of illegal. So it can be that explicit, but it can also be a tacit thing. It could be like another time I was working at a club and I didn't realize that I needed to tip out the DJ. And then the DJ was not putting me on stage all night, and I went up to him and he just gave me this look, and I didn't understand what it was. And I think, and then I forget, I think he said something like, you know, I put the girls on stage who tip me, something like that. And I was
that
like,
could have been a conversation instead of an aggressive moment, you know?
Yeah.
He could have just come up to you and been like, this is the thing that that's striking me with these conversations. Like, we're talking about labor. Labor is labor across the board. Yet in these situations where someone has to disrobe or get intimate or, you know, whatever, it feels like you're losing your humanness, or people are stripping you, pun not intended, of your humanness. Like, you are a worker, you are a human, therefore, you know, you have the right to a respectful conversation about, like, hey, in this industry, you know, this is protocol or whatever, you know, you have the right to not be coerced at work. But because you take your shirt off or XYZ, it feels like there are all these like murky little rules that people slide in that are unsaid. Would you agree with that? Is that, or is that just kind of like me reacting like a mama bear in the first impression?
I definitely think because there's this misunderstanding about stripping, for example, and sex work generally, that it's a gig job. It's a short-term thing. It's something that you do for fun, to experiment. And again, just like sluts having fun. And so people don't think about it as a career, and they don't treat it as a career, at least the people who are on the regulatory end and the people who are enforcing policies in the various companies and institutions that employ us. And so we're taken advantage of.
Oh my God, I want to like open a strip club.
Like, I know, just to be like,
yes, just to have like a fire ass work environment,
right? Like, like, we post our rules on the walls,
yes.
So we
like
everyone knows.
There are definitely like places where the rules are posted on the walls, and I would say at my club they do say like you need to tip out this person, and this person. But there's a lot of inherent unfairness in this tipping situation because it is a largely femme workforce, even though there's like a lot of people who are on the gender spectrum.
Sure.
Non-binary and also masculine outside of the club. People who identify with he, him pronouns outside of the club. But I would say it's generally a femme workforce, and the femme workforce is forced to tip out the predominantly male staff.
And that's the part that gets me. It makes me feel upset, and it makes me feel icky that it's like, I don't know, if the security guard and the DJ were women, like if this was like a women's club, I would feel less.
But it's also like, why are the people assuming the most risk who are doing the hardest, the heaviest labor.
Yeah.
You know, having to pay out the most, having to pay out everybody just to work. You know, it's like we're paying everybody kind of a version of hush money to just like let us do our thing, let us work in some degree of peace. And that's the only way that we're able to get that peace is to pay everybody off a little bit. Everybody wants a cut.
Oh my God. And like you said, like these are, you're also tipping out people who have their hourly wage, who know how much they're going to be making that night anyways, and who are getting that more traditional version of a paycheck. And then it's like you still have to tip them out. I just... Did y'all like know that? I did not know that. My mind is so blown.
Yeah, I knew we had to tip out, but I didn't know you had. I thought that when you're tipping out, I thought you were tipping out the bouncer for protection, which is obviously true. But the tipping out the managers and like the upper, like the staff that way,
right?
No, and bartenders are already getting tips.
I know, like and servers should be getting tips too,
right?
It's just like. It bothers me how unacceptable that would be in another workplace and how expected it is in the club. And because it is taking advantage of the stigma and the added cost that the dancers have.
Yeah, and we're revealing in this conversation that like the shame is still very much placed on the femme presenting folks who are working when it's everybody engaging in the space, right?
Manager like, gets to be, I manage a business. DJ gets to be a DJ. Server gets to be a server, you know?
Right.
And nothing else.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's even wilder in California now because we got reclassified as employees. And so now there's all kinds of wild things that are happening. clubs have tried to skate out of paying wages by classifying dancers as partial owners or all kinds of other really weird things. Another thing here in California is that we're forced to not only pay our wages, but also pay our wage tax. So we have to hustle up. So at my club, I have to earn twice as much money to pay my wage and to also get myself paid out. So like I to earn my wage, which I have to pay out, which is about like $100. And another wild thing is at my club, for example, we're treated as employees for the first 5 hours that we work. And then they don't really document us after that. So they're not paying any additional wages. And so dancers can work 12-hour shifts and only really be on the books for 5 hours and get paid hourly for those 5 hours. The rest of those hours, they don't get any additional hourly wage.
How is that legal? How?
It's not. But the problem is regulators are not looking into these kinds of things. They're not. It's not on their radar. They're not like, they don't care about that stuff because they don't care about this industry. It's a hot potato kind of issue, you know? A lot of people who are working in politics don't want their names conflated with sex work because of the stigma around it. It's something that is like a very politically undesirable thing to champion, unfortunately.
And yet it's the oldest profession in the book.
And yet they purchase sex work, you know?
I know, that part.
I don't know if we covered this, guys. Sorry. Is there... So I've actually only been to a strip club once or twice in my life. Can we circle back to, like, you said, you know, 25-30% in terms of tipping, like, of what in particular? Like, can we get a little bit more clear on how much people should be, like, really, like, you know, giving you guys? Because this is important.
Great question.
Okay, well... I always advise people, if you're going to go to a strip club, expect to spend at least $200. It's a luxury. It's not like, you know, it's not something that you're supposed to price down or have the price chops because, like I've said, we are assuming a lot of, you know, we're assuming a lot to do this labor. So expect to pay like $200 in total. Whenever you're tipping the stage, I would say tip at least $5 per performer who's going up. It's not a ton, but it is. It can, you know, it adds up.
Add
for
up,
sure.
Yeah.
especially since typically like stage sets for dancers are like about 5-6 minutes most of the time. So you're rotating pretty quickly through that, like $5 every 6 minutes approximately. I would say like whenever I was talking about the tipping 20 to 30%, that's on a dance. So like if you purchase a private lap dance with a stripper, then that's where I would say like 30% of the total dance cost or something gotcha. Like that. Unless it's like a $20 dance, which unfortunately like a lot of clubs still have single song dances for $20, which is really low. What? Especially whenever I know it's kind of it's wild to me. Thankfully that's not the case at my club, but a lot of clubs do that. So, you know, tip your dancer $20 if they're on your lap and you're getting a lap dance, like it's not ridiculous. It's nice. It's just a nice yeah. thing to do.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. The last time I was at a strip club, it was in Houston, Texas. And I got one of the best massages, like shoulder massages. She was like, doing a lap dance? I was like, no, but you could rub my shoulders. And she did. And I tipped her $50 for that. It was like for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was like, man, we should advertise this more. You know, like we'll dance, we'll do whatever. We'll also give bomb massages.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of lap dances. It's a very vague term. And it can mean, you know, like riding in somebody's lap, or it can mean a hover dance, but it can also mean like talking for that amount yeah. of time, or, you know, cuddling, neck massage, I don't know, even a little fortune telling reading. Like there are so many different talents that strippers have. And so, you know, it's a pretty expansive term mm-hmm. whenever you actually see it applied.
I love your framing of it as this is a luxury. Like going here is a luxury. It's not grabbing a cup of coffee real quick. Mm-hmm. It is more akin to like going and getting an expensive massage or going and getting an expensive whatever the hell, you know.
Right. And yeah. if you choose to do it multiple times a week, then mm-hmm. that's on you.
Right.
You still need to be paying.
You need to assume the cost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Budget it in. Right. Work your numbers. Do what you need to do.
Yeah.
But pay up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a luxury expense.
And to that end, I heard an adage a while back that strippers are the first people who can predict a recession.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh,
yeah. So
we're in a recession.
For example, now.
Yeah.
It's definitely been a really different environment post-COVID. Well, I guess we're not post-COVID. We're still in COVID, to be clear. People are still getting COVID, still dying of COVID. So that's real. But the economy hasn't recovered, and the club that I was used to prior is very different. It's just quieter. People are very cautious with their money right now. There's not as much big spending. A mm-hmm. lot of people who used to be regulars who would show up like every week, the real regulars, have not returned. A lot of people in California moved to Zoom towns, you know, like places where they could work remotely that are a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. So they moved out of state. They moved to a lot of suburban enclaves. And so we lost a lot of our major customer base. And across the country, I've heard this from strippers like all the way in like Miami and stuff, which is like one of the strip club capitals in the country. People are saying that clubs are quieter, they're empty whenever they used to be packed at any given hour. And so we feel it first, maybe, but I think we're feeling it across the board. I mean, in California, it's like $6-7 for a gallon of gas. I mean, that has to translate. I mean, if we think about how much of what percentage of minimum wage that is, that's a really high percentage. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't afford to drive to work because your half of your wage is going to gas, I mean, it's just a very self-defeating exercise.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving this conversation about the financial and economic rules of engaging with sex workers. And I very much want to continue this conversation, and we will, but we're going to do that
after the break.
And
we're back. And we're just about to talk with our guest, Selena, about the economics of sex work. So can you talk to us a little bit more about this side of things and the types of financial models that strippers are typically operating within?
So again, this is a tip-based economy, largely. So there's like a couple different ways that strippers make their money. In California, because we have to pay our own wages and our own wage tax, there's a really heavy pressure on strippers now to sell dances, mm-hmm. Versus getting their money primarily on stage. Mm-hmm. There are other places like Miami and I would say Houston, where strippers make a lot of their money doing stage shows. So it's mostly a stage-based tip economy. And that's the ones where the clubs are often like counting the money ahead, or you see like all of the pictures of like strippers with like garbage bags full of ones. Right. So that kind of like tip heavy situation. But there are a lot of clubs that are tip based and that don't really offer lap dances, especially in places where it's more conservative, where there's like a lot of no touch rules. Mm. There are certain states and places like, for example, San Diego, where you have to keep like 6 inches of distance between yourself and customers whenever giving dances or things like that.
Which do you prefer?
So there's like a pretty one. I personally think that you should leave it up to the strippers to decide where their levels of comfort are. Mm-hmm. So another thing that people like don't have. Okay, I think that there's like a lot of negativity directed at people who use strip clubs as like a place to give full service sex services. So this is illegal advice, but a pragmatic take, I would say. Mm-hmm. There are not many places for full service sex workers where they're able to provide their services in a place that has security, that has somebody enforcing that they're going to get paid. You know, the bouncers and the kind of enforced dance payment allows full service sex workers to work in a controlled environment where they have those protections. And I think that it's really important that we care about full service sex workers. And I should define that. That's people who have sex, whatever that means to that person. That could be penetrative, it could be oral, it could be like hand stimulation. I think sex is like a pretty wide breadth of things as a queer person. So, you know, it's not just any one thing. So strip clubs can be a place where people who would otherwise face a lot of harm and danger being independent and doing this on their own, having to go to somebody's house and or to a hotel where they could, you know, they don't have as much control. They don't have people looking out for them unless there's like a pimping system involved. Which is something I could go into as something that is much more complicated than people make it out to be. But anyway, it can be a place for people who want to offer these services to have that protection. And I think that that should be something that is kind of valued. So that's why I say that we should allow people to do what they feel comfortable with. I think it's good to have protections. I think it's good to have bouncers who care and listen whenever strippers say that they feel uncomfortable, whenever they alert them about a harmful customer exhibiting behavior that is, you know, alarming and is inappropriate and not consensual. That should definitely be paid attention to and responded to promptly, immediately. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. But I think that that should be a thing. But I think otherwise, give strippers and sex workers the freedom to make their own choices about their bodies and their comfort levels and what they consent to do.
Well, that's really hard for Uncle Scam because he doesn't want to think about people being autonomous in their bodies in general, you know?
Yeah, it's not the vibe of where we're at.
No,
not in the vibe.
It's not our current vibe. Yeah. So, like, I have a one-off question, another one. We have a very, as like a society, I think we have a very nuanced look at how, or a nuanced perspective have on the people who actually frequent strip clubs, right? So like you see in pop culture, like it's something that's celebrated. It's a place that you go for a celebration, like I said. And I think also there's probably some people who feel some kind of way about the people who frequent strip clubs often, right? How do you, as a stripper, view your regulars? How do you see them? How do you...
What's the vibe?
They take care of me.
They take care of you.
I mean, honestly, it's like strippers depend upon their regulars because, as we just spoke about, like, the economy fluctuates a lot, and it's honestly like their loyalty to us and consistency that can really keep us afloat during periods of economic instability. Regulars are normal people. And most of the time, whenever you have a regular, it's because there's something about your personality that clicks with their personality. Not always the case. Not always the case, I will say that. But my regulars are people who I get along mm-hmm. with, who are interested in who I am, who care about the things that I care about. We talk about political stuff. Mm-hmm. We talk about labor issues together. We talk about emotions and therapy, and I send them therapy videos and stuff like that.
Love it.
Like, we have a very intimate relationship together that is very human and complicated. And we even talk about, in a very meta way, our relationships, mm-hmm. like how they view being a customer, how they view spending money to spend time on me. And what I think is fantastic about my regulars is that they understand that I'm performing labor, they value my labor, and they really respect me. And they go out of their way to show that they respect me and to value my labor. So I think that regulars are great. You know, of course, there are definitely crappy people across any industry. There are crappy customers everywhere right. who are rude and unappreciative, and that's the nature of life. But strip club customers are not bad people. They're just people.
Right. So in that way, it sounds like your regulars are your employers, really. And the strip club is kind of the infrastructure that facilitates you meeting with your employers.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. The strip club facilitates me having a client base or gives us a venue to mm-hmm. meet that is controlled. Mm.
So keeping that in mind, how would you want to see the future of strip clubs? Like, like that business structure?
They should be owned by strippers. They should be owned by strippers. They should be unionized. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very for a co-op model. That's my personal thing. I'm very for unions. I think that the more collective bargaining power that we have as a labor group, the better conditions can be. And who knows more about strip clubs than strippers? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a whole list of things that we would love to see strip clubs do to make them better, and not just like nicer and more pleasant for us, but pleasant for everybody and overall more profitable. But unfortunately, our employers don't ever really ask us for these insights or take them into consideration, and they tend to cut corners because mm-hmm. they can. And because, you know, we are excluded from the condition, from the discussions about the condition of our labor by and mm-hmm. large.
Mm-hmm. I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Wow. I mean,
but that's that. I love strip clubs. I'm in this. I know I've said a lot of stuff and it's complicated. I'm trying right. to create a complicated picture.
Right.
Because, but there's a lot of love there too. And I wouldn't talk this much about it or have this nuanced view about it if I didn't care deeply about it as an institution or as something that people should have access to. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge believer in intimate labor.
Yes.
I think it's so life-changing, and touch can be so important, and the connections that I've made with people have literally saved lives. Mm. Like, I've had multiple customers who are on the verge of, you know, taking their own lives, who have told me that I've made them reconsider things and they've made massive changes in their lives. And those are, like, you know, big stories, but on a smaller level, just like seeing people feel good and experience comfort or joy, or, you know, there's just a lot of beautiful things. I've also have been lucky enough to kind of help somebody who had a partner pass to recover from that and get back into her body and to get back into experiencing erotic touch in a way that wasn't just traumatic and and sad, and gradually like open her up to meeting her new partner. So it's really incredible the breadth of experiences that you can have. But it's good to have a complicated understanding, because we can lean into glamorizing, which is again not giving us the full picture, and or demonizing, which paints a very negative picture. And there's the truth is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would like to highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I mean, I think you've done such an incredible job, at least for me, of really highlighting the complicated nature of it, and that it is nuanced, and the how beneficial it could be, for example, to have a venue to conduct this work where you do have physical protection. And then also the complicated and very unsatisfying nature of tax fraud and, you know, and being like super controlling of those wages and stuff like that, where it's like, but yeah, I mean, you've taught me so much in just 52 minutes.
Yeah. Selena, where can folks find you?
Plug it all.
Well, I have not been super on social media, in all honesty.
Good for you.
But you can follow me at Pretty Boy Girl on Instagram. That's my main place that I am as far as the public facing stuff. But if you want to know all of the juicy details and wild scandals of my life, you can follow me on Patreon. Subscribe for $5 or give me however much money you want to give me. It's at The Real Pretty Boy Girl. I share all of my stories about working in the club, escorting, sugaring, and everything in between. And there's a lot in there. There's like 3 or 4 years, maybe more than 4 years at this point, of writing. And I publish every week. So a new story there every week could be yours to access.
Amazing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We love
it. 3 to 4 years.
And, so I also, yes. One more thing I want to plug is the organization that I am the president of. It's called Strippers United. You can follow us on Instagram at soldiers_of_pole_. And that was our original title, Soldiers of Pole. But now we are Strippers United, and we are a labor organization advocating for the rights to dignity and safety for strippers in the United States and
incredible.
Beyond.
Beautiful.
Come on, Selena.
Beautiful.
Come on, Selena. Yes.
Selena is a sex worker. Yes. Selena is a body worker. Selena is a storyteller.
Yes.
I love it.
Selena's an artist. Activist.
Selena's an organizer. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Selena's many things.
Yes.
We love it.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us and educating us and really just like busted it all wide open, because you really did.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. If you like this, stick around, because next week we're back with more of the same, but different.
I love that.
Because next week we are talking about the cost of content creation.
Something we know a thing or two about.
A thing or two about.
Just a little bit. Just a smidge.
Thank you, Daddy BuzzFeed.
Bye.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.